Next case is 06-1815 and 06-1853, Paul Fisher versus Emma Hassenjager. In this case, Justice Cupp has recused himself, and we're pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Cupp, Judge Patricia Blackman, who is a judge of the Court of Appeals sitting in the 8th Appellate District. Welcome, Judge Blackman.
Thank you.
Mr. Doherty.
Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, Justice Blackmun, may it please the court, my name is Douglas B. Doherty. I'm here representing the appellant Paul Fisher. Mr. Fisher is with us today in the gallery, and I would like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. The basic question presented in this case is, does Revised Code 3109.04E2B allow a court to modify residential parent and legal custodian status in a shared parenting case? In this case, context is critical. We already have another subsection, E1A, that allows a court to make such a modification. However, E1A contains a stricter test, a higher standard, if you will. Thus, the question becomes, did the legislature intend to enact a provision that grants the same power to a court, but that contains an easier test, or a lower standard? We believe that the answer to that question is no. Two primary points support this conclusion, and these are the first two arguments in our merit brief. Point number one, a court can only modify residential parent and legal custodian status under E1A. Basically, E1A says that a court can modify an allocation of parental rights and responsibilities. A designation as a residential parent and legal custodian is an allocation of parental rights and responsibilities. Thus, under E1A, a court has the power to modify residential parent and legal custodian status. Numerous courts of appeals have come to this conclusion. Further, no other statutory provision in the custody statute states that a court can modify residential parent and legal custodian status in a shared parenting case. Point two, Section E2B does not authorize a court to modify residential parent and legal custodian status. The express language of E2B does not contain such an authorization. It is silent regarding residential parent and legal custodian status. It only says that a court can modify the terms of a shared parenting plan. Unfortunately, the statute does not define these words. Thus, at this point, another core question is raised. Is residential parent and legal custodian status a term of a shared parenting plan? The answer is no. Residential parent and legal custodian status is not a term of a plan, rather, residential parent and legal custodian status is addressed in a shared parenting order. If we look at subsection A2 of the custody statute, it says that a court may grant a shared parenting order. Subsection K6 states that residential parent and legal custodian status is always addressed in a shared parenting order. Now, the language of that subsection is a little awkward, but basically it says two things. If the court issues a shared parenting order, and if that order is silent, then both parents are automatically designated as residential parent and legal custodian. The subsection also says that if a court desires, it can expressly address residential parent and legal custodian status as well. Thus, we see that residential parent and legal custodian status is addressed in a shared parenting order and not in a shared parenting plan. Other provisions of the custody statute also show the difference between a shared parenting order and a shared parenting plan. Various provisions show that an order and a plan have different functions. Basically, these show that an order is a general grant of authority, and hence it addresses residential parent and legal custodian status. While a plan contains the specific details on how that authority will be exercised, for example, the parenting time schedule, child support order, medical and dental care. An example of these provisions is subsection J. Subsection J defines shared parenting, and it says that shared parenting means parents share in the care of their children, and now I quote, in the manner set forth in the plan for shared parenting, close quote. Other examples showing this relationship are addressed in my merit brief on page 18. Also, if we look at the subsection that addresses the contents of a shared parenting plan, we can see that residential parent and legal custodian status is not to be addressed in a shared parenting plan. Subsection G addresses the contents of a shared parenting plan. It mentions five specific terms that must be addressed in a shared parenting plan: living arrangements, child support, medical and dental care, school placement, and holiday and special days treatment. However, this subsection does not mention residential parent and legal custodian status. If the legislature intended for residential parent and legal custodian status to be addressed in a shared parenting plan, it could have easily said so in this provision. It did not. This omission shows the legislature's intent that residential parent and legal custodian status should not be addressed in a shared parenting plan. In my remaining time, I'd like to turn for a moment to arguments 3 and 4 from our merit brief. These basically look at policy results should the court hold that E2B allows modification of residential parent and legal custodian status.
Let me interrupt you at that point, Mr. Doherty. You've used the term modification.
Yes, Your Honor.
Was there a termination by the trial court, or did the trial court use the word terminate in its order with respect to the shared parenting plan?
That's a wonderful and complicated question.
Well, thanks.
When the trial court issued its order, it stated that it was making the mother the sole residential parent and legal custodian, but at the same time, it also said, however, all of our other provisions shall remain in effect. And there was an underlying shared parenting plan here. When the case went up to the Court of Appeals, the Court of Appeals said the trial court may have thought that it terminated a shared parenting plan, but by virtue of its actions, it did not.
Well,
it only modified.
The trial court thought it terminated the shared parenting plan, or at
yes,
least
Your Honor.
It said it did. And the Court of Appeals said, well, you may have thought you did, but you didn't. You just modified it.
Yes, Your Honor, that's exactly right.
Okay, now can you highlight for my benefit why that becomes relevant to this argument?
I don't think it is.
Does the termination by the trial court change anything with respect to what you're arguing to us?
Not really, because the quote-unquote termination that the trial court did was to terminate the father's status as residential parent and to leave intact the mother's status as residential parent. But it did not terminate the plan in its entirety.
That's somewhat confusing. Could you explain, in the mediation, order that came after the mediation for the shared parenting, I was under the impression that there was no designation as to status in the plan or in the trial court's order.
You're exactly right, Your Honor. There was not a specific designation. So what the law does, in accordance with subsection K6, it designates both parents.
So what the trial court was actually doing is not terminating, but actually designating to the mother the status in the last order. Does that make sense?
In large part, yes. I would agree that it designated the mother as the sole residential parent, but it did that by terminating the father's status as residential parent.
So, but now you are suggesting that when you have a shared parenting agreement under the statutory law in Ohio, when there is no designation in the shared parenting plan, then both parents have that status by presumption.
Yes, Your Honor, exactly. Under subsection K6, that's exactly what the statute says. If I could turn back to arguments 3 and 4 for just a moment. What we see here is if the court determines that residential parent and legal custodian status can be modified under E2B, this will lead to unreasonable and probably unconstitutional results.
Why wouldn't those terms, as far as designation is concerned, be terms of art? If the trial court allowed the shared parenting plan to remain in existence.
I don't understand your question, Your Honor.
The way I read the briefs is that the trial court actually allowed the shared parenting plan to remain in existence.
Yes.
It changed the designation as far as status was concerned.
Yes.
Time was not modified, support was not modified, and those other issues were not modified.
I think there was a minor modification on the parenting time schedule.
Okay. But my question goes to why wouldn't those terms be terms of art and incorporated, especially because the language shared parenting plan is still in the trial court's order.
Well, to the extent that I understand your question, they would not be terms of art and would not remain in effect because the trial court made a specific order designating only the mother as the residential parent and legal custodian at that time.
What did that do to the father's rights under the plan?
It removed his status as residential parent and legal custodian and any rights or duties that would flow from that. Now, it's difficult for me to go beyond that because, unfortunately, we have a statute that nowhere defines the term residential parent and legal custodian.
Well, that goes to what the Court of Appeals was actually reaching for in this particular case by saying that there were several, that the terms of the status terms themselves actually are part of the shared parenting plan just by virtue of the fact that you have a shared parenting plan.
That is what the Court of Appeals said, but we believe that the Court of Appeals incorrectly analyzed the statute. And at least 5 other courts of appeals in the state of Ohio have come down on the appellant's position, whereas this Court of Appeal is the only one that has come up with this interpretation.
How can you have a shared parenting plan without custody being shared?
If I understand your question, perhaps you're saying, how can you have a shared parenting plan and only have one residential parent and legal custodian? Is that what you're saying?
I guess what I'm saying is, who are you sharing the responsibility with?
The other parent.
Well, if one person has 100% of the custody and control, how do we share?
That would not be shared parenting.
Well, isn't that what happened here, though?
Oh, no. When the trial court modified the old order, it left intact many rights for the father, including the right to have possession of the child just under 50% of the time.
See, that was the basis of my question. Are these terms that we're using terms of art as opposed to terms that actually affect the allocation of rights? Because as far as the trial court was concerned, as far as the Court of Appeals was concerned, nothing changed. The modification came as to status. The question is, under the statute in Ohio, how important is status in the big scheme of things when shared parenting is still the goal?
Your Honor, I think the designation of residential parent and legal custodian is critical. Because here's the bottom line. Such a designation is basically a repository for any remaining rights and duties that are not specifically articulated in a shared parenting plan or somewhere else in a court order.
Well, could the trial court order a couple, hypothetically, to enter into a shared parenting plan?
No, that's prohibited by the statute. A court cannot order them to do that.
So it has to be by agreement.
agreement with subsequent court approval. What the statute says is mom may submit a plan, dad may submit a plan, the court then reviews the plan. Mm-hmm. It may approve one or it may approve neither. And if the court determines that one of the plan is acceptable, the court then moves to the next question, which is shared parenting appropriate for these two people? You can have a beautiful plan that addresses everything, but if mom and dad hate each other and fight like cats and dogs, the court will typically not order shared parenting.
Would it be appropriate to conclude that in essence, what the trial court did was to terminate this plan and give custody to the mother?
No, that would not be appropriate, mm-hmm. because what the custody statute says is if a court terminates a shared parenting plan, it must make a de novo determination of all issues. Mm-hmm. And the trial court did not do that in this case, so it would not be appropriate to conclude that there was a termination of shared parenting in this case. And I see my time is up. Any other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Daugherty.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Tesno.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, honorable members of the court, Justice Blackmun, Mr. Daugherty, good morning. I thank you for the opportunity to address the court. Your Honors, if I might, I would like to address first one issue that the appellant raises in his brief that I feel in his reply brief that I feel needs to be clarified. We raise the issue whether or not the decision of the trial court was proper under E1A or E2B. Our position is that even if the court had applied the standard under E1A, which would include not only determining that the orders were in the best interest of the child, Demetra, but also that there had been changed circumstances, there were sufficient facts to establish the change of circumstances. Judge Zitter, in her decision, did not, as Mr. Daugherty states, agrees, did not specifically state under which section she was making the decision. This was something the Court of Appeals stated.
Mr. Tesno, so when we're talking about these higher standards and which standard should apply, the best interest is for both, but in the higher standard, you would also have to show change of circumstances.
That is correct,
okay.
Your Honor.
All right.
Mr. Daugherty, and the appellant, in their reply brief, states that we're asking this court to determine what Judge Zitter would determine if this case were remanded. That is not what we're advocating. What we're advocating is that there are sufficient facts, if the court were to review the entry, that would reach that higher standard. And therefore, the court does not have to reach the decision of which subsection would apply. Either subsection would apply on the facts given before the court in this case.
So you are indicating that the shared parenting plan is still in existence under the trial court's order?
That is correct, Your Honor.
So the trial court, the change of circumstances that occurred for the trial court was what?
Well, Your Honor, in reviewing it, the court found that the appellant had kept Demetra away from her mother in violation of the court's orders, that he had shown no remorse for the anxiety it had caused her in her child being kept away from her in violation of the court orders, that he had not exhibited any concern about violating the court's orders, that he denigrates the child in front of, or denigrates the mother in front of the child.
That may be a change of the shared parenting circumstances, but is it a traditional change of circumstances as we know it legally in Ohio?
I think it is, Your Honor. The Davis versus Flicklinger case, which the appellant cites in his brief, talks about what the change of circumstances need to be, and this court has ruled previously that that is a change of substance. There has to be sufficient change of circumstances that would reach that burden. I think that is something, obviously, for the trial court to determine on the facts of any given case, but I believe that the court had sufficient facts before it in this case. I would also submit to the court that if we accept the argument and the statute that says that in initially establishing a shared parenting plan, the court must determine what is in the best interest of the child. To modify or terminate the shared parenting plan at a later point in time, the court must determine what is in the best interest of the child. Some facts must have changed to change what is in the best interest of the child, and we would submit that those are always changes of substance. Something has changed for the best interest of the child, And Justice Blackmun, I believe you were asking earlier about words of art, and I think that's what we have here.
But isn't the best interest of the child a legal determination for a court to make?
Yes, Your Honor.
Not based really on change in the surroundings or physical environment of the child, is it?
Not by itself, Your Honor. I think it is. Yeah, the court has to look at the entire whole picture, look at the circumstances that are involved, and consider all the factors given at that time.
You know, what fascinates me about this case, how can you have shared parenting when you don't have co-parenting?
Your Honor, there is a lot of the, as I perceive it, a lot of the factors that go into shared parenting are still there. I think it is still incumbent on the parents to discuss matters, mm-hmm. to keep each other informed as to what is going on with their child, to carry on as two parents should be expected to carry on for the best interests of their children.
But the statute doesn't implicate adversity when coming to the arrangement for shared parenting.
Yes, Your Honor.
It
doesn't contemplate it, but it happens. In the real world, it happens all the time. That's why we're here. The parents don't get along 100%. But I think that the court can still tell the parents they have to act for the best interests of their child. And doing that, as I view
well,
this...
The residential piece may be easy, but what about legal custodian? What does that mean?
Your Honor, in my view, what that means is one thing. In this case, this matter was originally brought back to the court because the appellant kept the child away from the appellee in violation of the court orders. By designating the appellee as residential parent and legal custodian, should he do that in the future, he would be possibly in violation of a criminal statute of interference of custody and could be prosecuted for that. So I think by making that change, the court has left that door open for criminal prosecution against him in the future should he try further actions like that.
Well, I realize that you've said that this case can be solved under both section, under the change of circumstance section and under the lesser standard. Well, some have referred to it as a lesser standard, but it's the best interest of the child standard. But what do you do in a situation, in this kind of a case, where the Court of Appeals has said that these terms, residential parent and legal custodian, are a part of the shared parenting agreement and therefore can be modified at any point in time? Obviously, the Court of Appeals saw some tension and some concern in not going the route that you're suggesting under the change of circumstance issue.
Yes, Your Honor. If I understand your question correctly, it's a question of can the court modify terms as opposed to the entire plan? Is that the question that you're asking?
Well, I'm concerned by, I realize that you have raised this question that this case can easily be solved under the change of circumstance section. So I wanted to return to the question that is before the court. And what other courts have done as far as modification is concerned on this issue.
Yes, Your Honor. Okay, thank you. Your Honor, if you were to look at the entire section of 3109.04e, either subsection 1A or 2B, both dealing with when a court may modify a plan or an order, as I mentioned in my brief, the first sentence of 3109.4E2 states that in addition to the modifications permitted under E1, the court can make the following changes. So it's our position, Your Honor, that the statute specifically says that the lesser standard is a second choice. When you read subsection B2, it makes reference to modifying or changing the plan as incorporated in the decree. It appears, Your Honor, that this allows the court to modify any portion of it as opposed to under E1, the higher standard, as we call it, which calls for the court to have to modify the entire plan. So whether we call the designation of residential parents a term or an allocation of rights or whatever, under subsection E2, the court has that further authority to modify or to change a portion of this as opposed to the whole thing. It is interesting to note that under E2C, when it talks about terminating the plan totally, it talks about the standard being best interest. I think it's disingenuous to argue that you could terminate a plan solely on best interest, but you can't modify a plan under the same standard. So I believe, Your Honor, that...
Well, that's not what the statute said. The statute says that you have a two-step process. You have to go through a change of circumstances, and you must show best interest. That's why some have reviewed that first section, A, as being the more strenuous standard, because it calls for a determination of both.
Yes, Your Honor, and I believe that if the court were to modify the entire shared parenting plan, that subsection A is the standard to apply. But if the court is going to modify a term of the plan, in this case, we submit that the residence of parent status is a term, then subsection B would apply. We think that the statutes obviously must be read together to give it the legislative intent that was given by the legislature at the time. To accept the appellant's arguments that for the court to modify the residential status and nothing else fits under subsection A, but all other terms fit under subsection B, ignores the plain language of the statute, asks the court to separate these two statutes, not read them in pari materiae, to ignore the first sentence of E2, which states that in addition to what is set forth in A1, and to determine that somehow custody is not a term.
Well, I have one last question. If the father and the mother in a shared parenting plan have 50% rights,
yes, Your Honor,
in terms of time, mm-hmm, possession and time of the child, and the mother is now designated not for purposes of environment or for moving, but is designated the residential parent, similar in this case,
yes, Your Honor,
could the mother then forbid the father from having more than 50% of the time?
If the court order specifically said the father had 50% of the time, I think she could, yes, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, the father's rights are, both parents' rights grow out of the decree at that point in time, and the reference would have to be made to the decree as to what.
So why wouldn't the allocation of rights have changed?
I believe it has changed, Your Honor.
Oh, okay.
As to the rights, as to determination. Now, when you look at what Judge Zitter did in this case, she did not change the parents' rights specifically in this case as to time. I think she tweaked a little bit, but did not really change it. So she's changed the
but
rights.
But you do believe that under the present order, that the mother could control the time that the father would have with the child, even though under the order it says 50%.
No, Your Honor. The order specifically says that the father has certain days, I believe it was Tuesdays and Thursdays from 7 in the morning for, mm-hmm, a 24-hour period, and
okay,
every other weekend from Friday at 7 to Monday at 7. So the times and dates were set forth. Mother cannot change that.
Mm-hmm.
She would be in violation of the court order, and that it would not be permitted.
In your view, did the trial court terminate the shared parenting or modify it?
She modified it, Your Honor. The trial court modified it, Your Honor, in my opinion.
And it's the finding of the Court of Appeals that it was modified.
That is
in
correct.
That respect.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Your Honors, the appellant submits that if the court were to rule that the standard under subsection B were accepted, that this would increase litigation and lead to harm to children. First, I realize judicial economy, we want to cut down on litigation, but I think the standard that all of us, the courts, the attorneys, the parents must look to is what's in the best interest of the children. I can't see how a court saying this is what is in best interest of the child is going to harm a child. When an argument's made that somehow saying the standard is do what's best for the child, judge, make the best decision for this child, I can't see how a court could say that somehow is going to harm that child. Also, Your Honor, when it comes to the issue of constitutionality, as I set forth in my brief, the burden is upon the appellant, since he's raising the constitutionality issue, to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the statute is unconstitutional. They have submitted no proof, no evidence as to anything as to unconstitutionality other than just what I call their unfounded speculation as how this will affect future cases. The statute is not void. It's very specific. If you want to terminate a plan or modify a plan, here's the way you do it. But under subsection B, the court also can look to what is in the best interest of this child in terminating or modifying a term of that. And I don't see that the term residential parent is any different than any other term. If the court says I'm going to designate who takes the children to school, that's a term. If the court says I'm going to designate who will make the medical decisions, that's a term. If the court's going to say I will designate who is going to give haircuts, that's a term. If the court's going to say here is who has residential parent status, that's a term. I don't understand the difference here, and I don't believe the court does either. If there are no further questions, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Tesno.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Daugherty, you've used your time, which may take 30 seconds.
I just have one final point. Less than 10 days ago, this case, this court, handed down its decision in the James case. Members of the court differed on various issues. However, every opinion mentioned the danger of a constant tug of war with motion after motion seeking to modify custody rights. Every opinion in that decision mentioned that stability was important for children. While we want perfect orders, we also want to deter litigation that goes on and on forever. To promote stability in custody cases and to protect Ohio's children, we ask the court to reverse the decision of the Court of Appeals.
Thank you, Mr. Daugherty. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. The marshal, please adjourn court.
All rise.